Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio on the 7th of February 2015. My name's Herewood Fenton. Great pleasure to be with you today, ladies and gentlemen. Well, today I'm going to be returning to the subject of vaccines. I know this has been a big topic for the show over the last month or so, and it's going to continue to be a big topic because, you know, this issue of vaccines in a way is illustrative of an unfolding crisis in our democracies around the world. The crisis is one of the tension between state power and individual rights. And we really see it in so many different sectors, and it's important to put the subject of vaccines in that broader context, because otherwise you can get bogged down into thinking that it's really just about the factual arguments, the specific claims and counterclaims that are made about vaccines or even specific vaccines. And you can lose the forest for the trees. Of course, those scientific arguments are very important and do need to be looked at, and both sides need to be given all our attention. And it's the same with, for example, climate change, where we have scientific opinion on both sides of the debate. And I believe that both sides of the debate are well entitled to have their voice. But what we see in the discourse, the way in which this topic is covered in the news and in the popular discussions, in the way people generally talk about it, is as if there is only one acceptable viewpoint, and that any other viewpoints are just marginal and kind of embarrassing, kind of weird, not part of the real world, just people who have crazy beliefs. And this is what we're seeing on so many different topics now, is that there's like one accepted view of things, and then all the people who disagree, which may be a huge numbers, are treated as if they're just a bunch of weirdos off on the sidelines. Oh, there are these people who don't believe in climate change. And, you know, they're just like the people who don't believe in the moon landings. You know, they're like the Holocaust deniers. And of course, there's all this conflation going on of comparing and conflating people who have non-standard views about things. And in the case of vaccines, in the case of vaccine refusers, anti-vaxxers as they're called, this is actually coupled with a kind of a campaign to smear anti-vaxxers as being somewhat disgusting, people who are filthy, people who are riddled with germs, people who are, because they don't vaccinate themselves or their children, are going to contaminate the rest of the world with their filth. And so this is the meme that is put forth about anti-vaccine people. So in today's show, I want to kind of draw it all together. I want to bring the topic of vaccines into the fold of the topic of the struggle of the individual, freedom and truth. Now, I want to start with a story that has come out of Syria, a really shocking story. 15 infants have died after receiving tainted vaccines in Syria. An earlier estimate of 36 deaths was revised down. Some 100 other children are believed to have been affected and suffered reactions. Local doctors have collected samples from the affected to try to determine the cause of death and sickness. Now, this is an article from the Telegraph from September 2014. What's most disturbing about this story is that there's been very little clarification as to what actually happened. There's various theories that have been put forward as to why the children died, one of them being that they were mistakenly given muscle relaxant. But that is not confirmed. And if you Google this topic and you try to find any clear statement, you'll just find conflicting stories. You'll also find conflicting stories about the number of children dead. Some articles are quoting up to at least 50 children being killed. Now, if it was a mistake in that they actually injected muscle relaxant, one still has to ask the question, why did muscle relaxant kill them? Muscle relaxant is not normally fatal. I mean, the reaction that the children exhibited was an allergic reaction, which sounds like overstimulation of the immune system, which looks like something from the actual vaccine material that would have done that. Basically, you know, an immune stimulus response would have come from the vaccine itself. But there has been no follow-up articles on the mainstream news about this. I've searched on Google. Basically, there's just now these conflicting stories, and the whole thing is now just in the dustbin of history. I didn't even know about it until recently. It popped up on my Facebook feed. But it's a point to bear in mind as we move into a phase now with all of this heightened paranoia about measles after apparently an epidemic of measles was started by someone visiting Disneyland who it is alleged was not vaccinated. But that, again, that story has never been substantiated. We do know that an epidemic of measles has originated in Disneyland. But there's been many cases of people who are fully vaccinated infecting other people. So the view that's put forth by the media shock jocks who say, you know, the unvaccinated started an epidemic is actually just hearsay. I mean, there is nothing to back that up other than that it's there. It fits in with their prejudice. It deeply fits in with the model that they have and with the agenda that they have to make it mandatory to inject these substances into our veins, namely the measles vaccine. I mean, the measles vaccine is just one of dozens of vaccines that's routinely given to children, and that there's no reason why only the measles vaccine should be mandatory. But as we see, again, with so many of these encroaching steps towards tyranny, we always see that there is always one issue that's brought forward. And they say, oh, well, this is really terrible. Look, this terrible measles epidemic. We're going to have to make measles vaccine compulsory. And, of course, that is just a step down the slippery slope, isn't it? I mean, there is absolutely no reason to then not continue making so many other vaccines compulsory. And once you agree to it, once it has been accepted in society that one vaccine is mandatory, then it's very hard to argue against making them all mandatory. And I've been debating some of these topics on Facebook, and one of the comparisons that's come up is wearing seatbelts. And, you know, I, of course, wear seatbelts. I think seatbelts are very important. I don't agree with mandatory seatbelt compliance enforced by law, but most people went along with that. They didn't see a problem with it. But now this seatbelt argument is being used as a reason why we should accept mandatory vaccines, believe it or not. People are saying, well, you accepted seatbelts being mandatory, so you should accept vaccines being mandatory. So this is the way it works, ladies and gentlemen. This is the way we go down the slippery slope towards total tyranny. And it always happens one step at a time, and you can then never go back up. Because you've already accepted. You've already accepted, well, we're going to allow the government to basically get right in our faces, intervene in our freedoms. We're going to make it mandatory by law. We're going to give the police powers. So you've allowed that in that context, then you're going to have to allow it in other contexts. So that's what we're heading towards with allowing this this meme of the greater good, you know, protecting society, the herd immunity, to have its way. And I need to address again this question of herd immunity. I brought it up in last week's discussion with Dr. Vera Scheibner. And, of course, Dr. Scheibner and many vaccine opponents simply argue that that herd immunity is not relevant because the vaccines don't work. But there is a more important concept here, and this is the concept of the individual versus the collective. And, you know, what are the responsibilities that the individual has to the collective? Where do they begin and where do they end? There's a story up on the Twitter feed, which I'll get up and I'll play to you the video that goes with it, of an osteopath, an osteopathic physician, who said on a TV interview in the United States that he did not want to inject his children with vaccines, even if that meant protecting others, because he didn't want to take the risk of harming his own children. And he didn't see it as his responsibility to protect others. Now, the man's name is Jack Wolfson, Dr. Jack Wolfson. He's a cardiologist and osteopath, and he's got a website that has a lot of information about his practice. But there's an interview here that he gave on CNN in which he is questioned about his views on vaccines. And I'm going to play a bit of that for you right now.
One family in double danger. Last week, 3-year-old Maggie Jacks and her little brother Eli were exposed to measles at this clinic near Phoenix, Arizona. Now Eli, just 10 months old and too young to be vaccinated, is showing signs of the virus, which can cause deafness, brain damage, or even death.
Well, I'm obviously scared. I send out texts to my family and my Facebook messages, and I say, please pray for my son.
If Eli does have measles, it's quite likely he gave it to his sister, and she could be in grave danger because Maggie has leukemia, her immune system wiped out by chemotherapy, which also would have pretty much wiped out any immunity from her own measles vaccine.
What is your biggest fear for Maggie?
My biggest fear is that I lose my child. Or short of that, she gets a severe case and becomes deaf. I mean, my family's been through enough in the last 6 months. I mean, I know there's worse out there, but we've had a rough go of it, and I don't want her to have to go through anything else.
We talked to the Centers for Disease Control, and they told us not to get anywhere near Eli or Maggie, so we've asked their parents to take cell phone video for us. We're also not going to get near their father, and that's because, like many adults, he has only limited immunity to the measles.
You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break. Stay with us. We'll be back with more. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And we are on the topic of vaccines again this week. And it's one that it branches out into so many important questions about freedom, rights, the philosophy of how we live our lives, that it is a topic that I never really tire of talking about. And today I'm really talking about this central concept of the individual's rights versus the collective's rights. Because we see that one of the most powerful arguments that mandatory vaccine proponents bring is that they say that the individual has a responsibility to the collective, right? We have a responsibility to the collective, and therefore we can't simply refuse. We can't say no, because in saying no, we become a reservoir for disease. We become a reservoir for disease because we don't protect ourselves from the vaccines, and then we will communicate those diseases to other people. So we become morally repugnant in taking this position. Now, there's a story here that I was playing, a story from CNN, and it started out here with the very emotional tale about the toddler with leukemia now at risk for measles. And again, this is a classic style that is used by the media. They always bring one story into the foreground to trigger your emotions, to pull on your heartstrings, when, of course, you know, one story, one instance tells you nothing about the statistical truths, about what the prevalence of particular diseases are. It's just one emotional, heartbreaking tale. And, of course, that is used to manipulate you. But this story goes another step further. It actually brings a vaccine skeptic on, and they manage to character assassinate him in a way that I find incredibly duplicitous. And I will continue playing from where we left off before the break, and then I'll comment a little on it. Here we go.
We can talk to their mother, however, because blood tests show that she does have full immunity.
And this is how the Jacks children were put in danger. Four members of one Arizona family went to Disneyland in December. They refused to vaccinate their children, and they came down with measles and went to the clinic. That family gave measles to a woman at the clinic, and she in turn exposed 195 children, including Maggie and Eli.
What would you say to that family if you could talk to them?
Your children don't live in your little bubble. Your children live in a big bubble. And my children live inside that big bubble with your children. So if you don't want to vaccinate your kids, fine. Don't take them to Disneyland.
Health authorities aren't naming the family of vaccine refusers, but we spoke with this man, Dr. Jack Wolfson, an Arizona physician who refuses to vaccinate his two young sons because he says vaccines are toxic.
Could you live with yourself if your child got another child sick? I mean, really sick, had complications, even death. Could you live with yourself if that happened?
I could live with myself very easily. It's a very unfortunate thing that people die, but unfortunately people die, and I'm not going to put my child at risk to save another child. I'm not going to sacrifice the well-being of my child. My child is pure. It's not my responsibility to be protecting their child.
Tim Jacks, a pediatrician, says the pain brought on by vaccine refusers is like a double whammy on top of his daughter's cancer.
It's a big deal emotionally. Kind of looking back, it brings to mind some of the same feelings we had when we first got Maggie's diagnosis.
For now, they can just pray their daughter recovers from leukemia and doesn't get measles.
Okay, that's the story. Now, this man, Dr. Jack Wolfson, has copped a huge amount of flack from what he said there in that interview. If you go to the page, and we'll put the notes on the show, the fact that he said that it's not his responsibility to protect other children is treated as if he's betrayed his Hippocratic oath, as if he is, you know, like a child molester, as if he said the most heinous thing, whereas in fact he's actually said something which is fundamentally true when you consider it just from the most basic principles of our society. It is not his responsibility to protect other children. I mean, it is his responsibility to protect his family. That's his own moral responsibility. But we can't be protecting everyone. It's not possible to go out and protect everyone in the world. Things will happen outside of our control. And getting infected with an illness is something that will happen to other families. His main point is that he doesn't want to put his own child at risk. But you see, what's being put to him is that he should override that. He should override his concerns about putting his child at risk, because he doesn't agree with vaccines, because he has to protect other children. So in a way, it's a double whammy. Not only is he required to protect all these other children, he's actually required to stand back from his parental responsibility, as he sees it, in protecting his own child. And this, my friends, is the way it's actually being perceived by hundreds of people who have commented on that very page, people who have been completely brainwashed and deluded by the corporate and pharmaceutical PR about vaccines, to believe that he should actually act that way. But I believe it's a deeper problem. I believe it's a deeper philosophical problem, in that people have been conditioned into this idea now that our responsibility to the collective is higher than our responsibility to ourselves and our family. And that is an extremely dangerous, slippery slope to be on. It's indicative of what happened in countries like Cambodia, in China, in Stalinist Russia, in Nazi Germany. Whenever this type of attitude takes over, once the state becomes paramount, wiping out the individual, then the individual will get wiped out. But let's return to the topic of the measles outbreak, which apparently started in Disneyland. Now, of course, the mainstream is saying that it was definitely started by unvaccinated children from those filthy families, that disease-ridden reservoirs of filth, those people who don't believe in vaccines. Anti-vaxxers are saying it was possibly a vaccinated child, and there's a lot of debate back and forth. Who's to say? It may have been started by the unvaccinated. But let me read to you from another article from last year. And this is actually from news.sciencemag.org. Fairly mainstream publication. Measles outbreak traced to fully vaccinated patient for first time. This is from the 11th of April, 2014. Get the measles vaccine and you won't get the measles, or give it to anyone else, right? Well, not always. A person fully vaccinated against measles has contracted the disease and passed it on to others. The startling case contradicts received wisdom about the vaccine and suggests that a recent swell of measles outbreaks in developed nations could mean more illnesses even among the vaccinated. When it comes to the measles vaccine, two shots are better than one. Most people in the United States are initially vaccinated against the virus shortly after their first birthday and return for a booster shot as a toddler. Less than 1% of people who get both shots will contract the potentially lethal infection. Anyway, it just goes on here about details. I just wanted to basically raise the importance of this article, showing that fully vaccinated people can still transmit the disease. Now, I'd like to read another article from naturalnews.com, more of an alternative anti-vaccination publication, which takes this theme a little further. But we are just going to break, so I'll leave that till we come back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be with you today. And while we're on the break, why not take a look at the website? And why not think about becoming a subscriber? It's very easy. It'll take you about 2 minutes. And you can get a wonderful T-shirt and become a contributing member to Truth News Radio. Think about that, folks, and I'll be right back. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And going through the vaccine news, I'm going to read to you an article here from Natural News. While the media continues to spew emotionally charged tirades about how the anti-vaccination movement allegedly triggered the recent measles outbreak that health authorities believe started at Disneyland, actual science suggests that the most likely cause of this insanely overblown outbreak was a person who was recently vaccinated. Numerous published studies reveal how live virus vaccines like MMR actually shed these diseases for many weeks or even months following vaccination, potentially infecting others, both vaccinated and unvaccinated. This means that any child who has recently given an MMR vaccine is a walking disease spreader, a truth that the media is refusing to report as even just a possibility in this case. The fact that vaccinated individuals can and do carry around contagious measles for many weeks while displaying no symptoms of the disease suggests this latest outbreak might be just another example of a vaccine strain outbreak. While a handful of the roughly 100 measles cases identified so far have tested out as wild genotype B3 measles, according to the latest reports, the original source of the outbreak has yet to be identified. Numerous scientific studies indicate that children who receive a live virus vaccination can shed the disease and infect others for weeks or even months afterwards, said Leslie Manukan, a documentary filmmaker and activist. Thus, parents who vaccinate their children can indeed put others at risk. A fairly recent example of this occurred in New York City during a measles outbreak that was documented in 2011. A twice vaccinated individual, that is an individual who received two separate doses of MMR, in accordance with US CDC recommendations, was found to have spread measles to multiple individuals. Nearly two decades ago, the CDC itself came to this same disturbing conclusion in a study published in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology. Urine samples collected from newly vaccinated 15-month-old children, as well as young adults, revealed that nearly all of them had detectable levels of the measles virus inside their bodies, meaning they are the real contagion threat. Now, I do have a conflicting report on the nature of the measles outbreak here from a blog called justthevax.blogspot. This is actually a pro-vaccine site. Now, it says here that they have actually identified the strain of the measles outbreak. And there is actually a link here to the CDC. I'll just quote the relevant part here. Measles genotype information was available from 9 measles cases. All were genotype B3, and all sequences linked to this outbreak are identical. The sequences are also identical to the genotype B3 virus that caused a large outbreak in the Philippines in 2014. During the last 6 months, identical genotype B3 viruses were also detected in at least 14 countries and at least 6 US states. So according to that, and if you trust the CDC, well, 9 of those patients were identified as having the wild strain of measles. But of course, that doesn't prove that they started it, does it? It just proves that they contracted it. I mean, we're never going to know the absolute truth, but what is clear is that vaccinated people can transmit the virus. And there seems to be a lot of other evidence suggesting that vaccinated people can also transmit the virus even without becoming ill, so unknowingly transmit the virus. Which incidentally is also true generally. I mean, you can be a carrier for an illness and not be sick. There are so many aspects to this, folks, but it's important to see it for what it is, to see that there is an agenda being put forth here. And they cherry-pick for cases to prop up the agenda. And they always use this philosophy of your responsibility to the collective to kind of ram it home. And it's very hard to argue against it, because if you say no, you're like this Dr. Wolfson, who incidentally I think is actually a perfectly decent fellow, but you're accused of being a terrible person, a terrible, terrible person. And of, you know, in this case, he's a doctor. They say he betrayed his Hippocratic oath and all these terrible things because he said he wasn't going to sacrifice his own daughter. He said he wasn't going to sacrifice his own daughter for the greater good. That's what you've got to be prepared to do now. See, the state has greater rights than your own family. That's the meme that's being put forward. Okay, I would like to move on now to talk about some other news stories. I want to talk a little about the ISIS execution video, the latest one that's come forth, showing the Jordanian pilot being burned alive. Now, folks, this is the first one I've actually watched. I generally refuse to look at this. They're basically snuff movies. They're very, very hurtful to your soul to have to watch this. But I know they're being used for propaganda purposes. In this case, I wanted to just see what it was. And, you know, I was actually a little surprised at this, because this video was done with a huge amount of production. I mean, it had a lot of graphics work done to it. It had a lot of cuts. It had a lot of quite elaborate video work done. And for something that has as its main message something so crude and so disgusting, it certainly was a surprise. I mean, the video is quite long, and it's mostly a catalogue of all the atrocities that have been committed allegedly against people in Syria by the West, and showing images of children being burned alive from missile attacks, etc. And it concludes with the video of the Jordanian pilot in a steel cage. And actually, it has some scenes of him walking around in a kind of dreamy state, you know, wearing orange fatigues, walking around in front of masked militants, looking kind of dreamy and relaxed. Very strange, very, very strange footage. And then we see him standing in this cage again, looking incredibly relaxed, hardly moving, as they light a flame which is fed possibly by some combustible material, I don't know what it is, something on the ground that moves towards him, and then into the cage, and then basically engulfs him in flame. But he doesn't even move during this whole process. He just stands there. I mean, it's just so counterintuitive. It's so odd. I mean, I'm not saying that that's evidence for it being faked. I mean, if it was being faked, they'd probably want to make it look more realistic. I mean, this just looks so unrealistic. It's bizarre. It's like they want you to think it's fake because it just looks so implausible. Because he doesn't try to get away from the flame at all. He just stands there, and then the flame suddenly just completely engulfs him, and then he starts writhing around. Anyway, it's still very disturbing. I'm not saying it's fake. I don't know what it is. It's just a very bizarre and very troubling thing that we're seeing. And, of course, it is... Its main propaganda value is for the West to continue attacking Syria and to bring in countries like Jordan. So this is a very important point to consider. That is its main propaganda value. That's going to be the effect that this video has. going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Now, I'd like to move on to talk about another important topic. I want to talk a little about the Australian economy and currency manipulation. I've got an article here which is actually published on a money advice site, which generally these sites are a bit lightweight. But I actually found that the article on here said some really important things about the nature of the way in which countries around the world are playing currency games and currency wars, and the adverse effects that that has on our quality of life and our standard of living. Now, this is from an interview with Jim Rickards, investing icon Jim Rickards. The thrust of Rickards' presentation is that we are in the middle of the third global currency war. Countries engage in currency wars in order to steal growth from their trading partners. They do this by weakening their currencies to increase export competitiveness, but it is a zero-sum game. The benefits are fleeting. Artificial currency manipulation only benefits some. For example, weakening the currency benefits firms that export goods, but it punishes everyone else. Now, of course, this is in the context today, is very important to talk about, because the Australian currency has been deliberately weakened by what they call jawboning of the Reserve Bank in Australia, constantly talking it down and also cutting interest rates, all in a deliberate strategy. And they've been very open about it. They've basically said, we want to push the Australian dollar down. And they assume that that everyone's going to think that's great, because they say it's good for the economy. Well, let's continue here from the article, because it's good for some players, and some parts of the economy will benefit, but others will be punished. It especially punishes consumers who need to buy products or services from overseas, goods and services that may not be available in the local market. It means the consumer pays a higher cost for the same quantity and quality of goods or service. And because the consumer has paid more for imports, it means they have less to spend on locally produced goods. In other words, an artificial currency rate favours some at the expense of others, while not necessarily producing any net economic benefit. It's another form of extortion, forcing a group of individuals to pay more for something with no increased benefit. Now, bear in mind, this article is from 3 years ago, when the Australian dollar was much higher than it is now. So just bear that in mind as we continue. Right now, the Australian dollar is high. So that's okay, right? In a free market, the exchange rate would reflect the demands for imports and exports. It would reach an equilibrium value. But the high Australian dollar isn't at an equilibrium point. It is at an artificially high level, a level that makes Aussie firms uncompetitive, both internationally and locally. Because of this, it forces consumers to source goods from overseas, because local producers are unable to compete. It's a partial win for the consumer, because you get goods cheaper, but only if you can source the goods from overseas. If not, you have to miss out, or perhaps buy a more expensive local product. The point is, any form of manipulation creates problems for businesses, consumers, investors, and savers. It makes it hard to predict what will happen next and what you should do with your money. Currency manipulation is a wealth war against you. And a quote here from another article in this article. This just goes to show how dysfunctional and volatile the financial system has become. The upheaval in Europe has disrupted the flow of global capital. US bonds are a safe haven. The Dow Jones Industrial Index is a safe haven. Aussie bonds and the Aussie dollar are a safe haven. Global capital has shoved fundamentals aside as it looks desperately for a place to hide. Bottom line, a major shift has occurred in capital markets, and it's sped up over the past 4 years. It's a shift of wealth from the private sector to the government sector. It used to happen quietly, taxes, levies, tariffs, etc., but now it's out in the open. The evidence is there. Money printing, currency manipulation, interest rate manipulation, and outright extortion. Jim Rickard said there is a currency war as countries race to devalue their currency in the belief that it will help the country export. The reality is that it's more serious than that. It's not just a currency war. It's a war between the haves, private citizens, and the wants, the government. It's a total wealth war. And it's up to you to fight to protect your wealth in any way you can. Now, what's important to bear in mind in this is that the Australian dollar has been wildly swinging in value for decades now. I mean, it's been subjected to these deliberate manipulations so many times, and it creates instability. I mean, if you don't know what your currency is going to be worth from 1 year to the next by such a huge margin, it destabilizes everything. And this destabilization is just the product of people's power-hungry, narcissistic agendas. And I've got an article here from the Sydney Morning Herald which really brings this all home. Australia accused of manipulating the Australian dollar to save iron ore miners. An American iron ore miner says Australia is manipulating its currency in a bid to save its iron ore exporters, who are so desperate for cash that they are even putting kangaroos for sale. In comments made on the same day the Reserve Bank cut interest rates to a historic low, Cliffs Natural Resources Chief Executive Lorenko Gonclaves said Australia was making a big mistake by assuming low iron ore prices would force Chinese iron ore producers out of business, and that it would be the Australian and Brazilian producers who would be left bleeding. Cliffs operates iron ore and coal mines in North America, but also has the fifth biggest iron ore export business in Australia. Its Australian iron ore business has less than 5 years of mine life remaining, and the company plans to either sell the asset or shut it when the current mine life expires. Mr. Gonçalves said the situation had started to smell bad in Australia. The Australians have very little to do at this time beyond continuing to manipulate their currency. Despite that, we are already seeing layoffs and mines shutting down throughout the entire iron ore mining landscape, he said during a quarterly briefing in the United States on Tuesday. The Australians are taking no prisoners with the Aussie dollar. They want to help BHP. They want to help Rio Tinto. They want to help that lady over there, Gina, whatever. Okay, so let me just cut to the chase on this and give you my overview of what we're seeing here. Again, this illustrates the same problem that we were talking about back in the vaccine section, and it was said quite clearly by Jim Rickards, the financial consultant. There is a war between the government and private citizens. It's the same phenomenon. It's the same illness. And this illness manifests itself in so many different ways. It's staggering. You see, people who don't have the perspective, people who don't understand and have the philosophical libertarian perspective, can't see the connections between these. They just think, oh, well, that's just a problem with the currency manipulators. Oh, that's just a problem with medical science and certain lobby groups. You know, in climate change, they'll say, oh, well, it's just because of the Greens, and the Greens want this. They think all of these subjects are just confined within their little zone. And, of course, you have arguments on both sides in those zones, and people will fight it out, but never really get anywhere. What I'm trying to demonstrate for you in this show is that they're all interconnected. They're all very, very clearly interconnected. And this currency manipulation is just the latest thing that I haven't really talked about much on the show before, but it's just another illustration of this, as was said in the article, this wealth shift. You know, wealth shift from the private sector to the government sector. The government now just prints money. The government is creating artificial wealth. Well, they feel empowered to do so. You know, they can get away with it. But, you know, the rest of the world knows it's a sham. You know, the emperor can walk around naked and people will pretend, right? But eventually they start laughing, right? Australia has a lot of great qualities. I know there's a lot of very smart, very awake, aware people in our country. I think it's time for us to come together a bit more. If we can come together across so many of these different topics of financial issues, environment issues, civil rights issues, issues of states' power, intervention in surveillance and arrest without charge, and all these different topics, if we can start to come together more and see what we have in common, I think we can make a lot more difference. That wraps up the show for today. The second hour will be a repeat of one of our interviews. I do hope to bring you a really excellent interview with Dr. Cherie Tenpenny in the coming weeks. Still trying to organise that. But it has been a great pleasure talking to you today. Please check out our website and please consider becoming a subscriber. We really, really do need your support. Truth News Radio Australia signing out. We'll be back next week.